From Spark and Anvil and Saffron Lab, this is Rise, in Chapter 1 of the Saffron Lab cast. This drama uses an AI-generated voice, voiced via Gemini 2.5. The kitchen was dark and still when Rise pulled the cloth off his oldest jar. He was a badger, old and cream-furred with soft silver stripes, and his canvas apron was more mended patch than apron by now. He did not turn on the big lights. He did not hurry. He just leaned close to the jar and listened. Inside, the sourdough starter was breathing. Not really breathing, but that was how Rise thought it. Little bubbles crept up through the pale, tacky flour and water sledge, rose to the top, and popped with the tiniest sound in the world. Bloop. A pause. Bloop. Good morning, Rise murmured to the jar. You've been busy. He fed it. A spoon of flour, a splash of water, a slow stir with a wooden paddle worn smooth from years of the same motion. Then he set it back on the shelf, next to all the others. A crock of cabbage going tangy into sauerkraut. A jar of kimchi flushed red and lively. A cloudy jug of kombucha with its strange rubbery cap. A tub of miso, the color of an old saddle. Every one of them was alive. Every one of them was doing something, slowly, in the dark, whether Rise watched or not. He pulled up a stool and sat. There was flour in his fur, and he did not brush it away. A young cook would have paced. A young cook would have wanted the bread now. But Rise had learned, a long time ago, the thing the jars kept teaching him every single day. Living things take time. You wait. The bread knows when it's ready. Bloop, said the jar. Rise smiled and closed his eyes and waited with it.
He had learned it on his grandmother's farm, at the far edge of the valley, when he was small enough to fit inside the flour bin if he'd wanted to. His grandmother kept the family starter in a burrow pot buried where the earth stayed cool. It was 80 years old. It had crossed an ocean once, wrapped in a wet cloth, kept alive by a great-great-grandmother, whose face Rise only knew from one soft photograph. And every morning his grandmother fed it, exactly the way Rise fed his jar now. One evening, young and impatient, he had tried to hurry a loaf. He turned the oven warm and shoved the dough in early, while it was still flat and sulky, because he wanted to eat before dark. The loaf came out dense as a brick, sad, sour in the wrong way. He'd expected his grandmother to be cross. Instead, she cut him a slice, buttered it, and ate it beside him without a word of scolding. It's still food, she said, chewing. It still fed us. But do you feel how it's heavy? That's the loaf telling you it wanted more time. She wiped her paws. The little ones in the pot are older than both of us put together. You can't shout at them to go faster. You can only make them a good home and wait for their answer. She pressed his paw flat against the burrow pot. Through the clay, he could feel the faintest warmth, the faintest hum of a whole invisible world at work. This is your inheritance, she told him. Not the farm. This. The same tiny helpers that fed her and fed me will feed you and whoever comes after. Take care of them. Pass them on. He never rushed a loaf again.
Rise came to Saffron Lab when he was already old, his stripes gone silver, carrying the burrow pot wrapped in a wet cloth exactly as it had crossed the ocean. Pestle, the kitchen's mentor, met him at the door and looked at the pot in his arms. What do you bring us? Pestle asked. Patience, mostly, Rise said. And these. He tilted the pot so Pestle could see the pale, bubbling life inside. Where I'm from, we say living things take time. Wait, the bread knows when it's ready. I don't make the bread rise. I just keep the little ones happy and stay out of their way. Pestle looked a long moment at the old badger and the older pot. Then he stepped aside to let them both in. Then the fermentation shelf is yours, he said. It always has been, I think. It was only waiting for you. Rye set the burrow pot on the coolest, quietest shelf, where the light was soft. He fed it, he covered it, And already, before he'd even unpacked his apron, it was bubbling.
His first students were the sort who liked things fast, so Rise did the opposite of fast. He gathered them around 4 jars of kimchi and said nothing for a moment. "Same cabbage in all 4," he finally said. "Same salt, same spice. This jar is 1 day old. This one, 3 days. This one, a week. This one, a month." He turned them slowly in the light. "Watch what time does." A girl named Dill leaned in and wrinkled her nose. "The old one smells strong." "It does," Rise agreed, delighted. "Taste them in order. Small tastes." They did. Day-old kimchi was crunchy and barely sour. 3 days had a fizz. A week was sharp and bright. A month was deep and almost fruity, a flavor that seemed to have a whole story folded inside it. "But nobody added anything," Dill said. "It just changed by itself." "Not by itself." Rise lifted the month-old jar like it was precious, because it was. "There are helpers in here too small to see. Good bacteria. They eat the sugars in the cabbage, and as they work, they make the sour and the tang and the safety. Salt and their own acid keep the bad stuff out. People all over the world figured this out long, long ago in 100 different kitchens. Kimchi in Korea, sauerkraut across Europe, injera in Ethiopia, idli in South India. So many corn foods among indigenous cooks of the Americas. Each one a gift somebody kept alive and handed down. He set the jar back gently. "So when we learn from them, we say their names. We visit their shops. We ask and we think. We never scoop up somebody's tradition and pretend we found it. That's the whole rule of my shelf. Work with the little ones and honor the people who learn them first." Dill looked at the 4 jars. Same cabbage, 4 ages, 4 whole different foods. And Rise watched the wonder land on her face, which was the moment he waited for most of all.
That night, Rise pulled a warm loaf from the oven. 20 hours it had taken, start to finish, and most of those hours he had simply left it alone. He set it on the board and did not cut it right away. He let it crackle and settle. The whole kitchen filled with the smell of it, warm and yeasty and round, the smell of every kitchen he had ever loved, all the way back to the burrow pot on the farm. Dill lingered at the door. "Was it hard?" she asked, "waiting all that time?" Rice thought about it honestly. "At the start it was," he said. "When I was young, the waiting felt like a stone in my chest. Now it feels like this." He breathed in slow, and his weathered shoulders came down and softened, and something in him went quiet and easy, the way a body feels when it finally stops hurrying and lets a good thing take exactly as long as it needs. "Feel that?" he said. "That unclenching. That's what the bread teaches, more than any recipe. Living things take time. You wait, and when it's ready, you're glad you did. All the way down." He cut the loaf at last. Steam rose, and gathered close in the warm dark, unhurried and cozy and glad, everyone felt quietly and in their own chests that the waiting had been worth every single minute.
You've been listening to a Spark and Anvil chapter, written by the Spark and Anvil writing team for ages 9 to 14. Spark and Anvil is a 501c3 public charity. Apps stay free forever. Curriculum aligned to Rise. Released under Creative Commons BY-NC-SA 4.0 for educational reuse. Visit Spark and Anvil for the full transcript.